ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Work With Purpose, a podcast about the Australian Public Service. My name's David Pembroke. Thank you for joining me. I begin today's podcast by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today, the Ngunnawal people, and pay my respects to their elders, past, present, and future, and acknowledge the ongoing contribution they make to the life of our city and this region. Today, another interview from our Work With Purpose, a National Perspective series, hosted by Dr. Gordon De Brouwer.
Hello to everyone listening and welcome to Work With Purpose, a podcast about Australia's public services. I'm Gordon De Brouwer and I'm the IPA National President. We've had a lot of interest in the program on Work For Purpose and we've been speaking with leaders from around the country. And I'm really delighted today to be speaking with Dave Stewart, who's the Director General of Queensland's Department of the Premier and Cabinet. Dave's got a long history, long experience in public administration, certainly both, of course, in Queensland, but also in New South Wales and the United Kingdom. And I'm really delighted to be speaking with you today, Dave.
Thanks, Gordon. It's great to be online.
Thanks. So why don't we start with how you saw, we're going to talk about the COVID pandemic, how you saw the pandemic emerging and how did it trigger and what did you see at the start?
Well, it's really interesting. I think we all came back from leave at Christmas time in early January, and certainly our chief health officer was very concerned about what she was seeing in China in particular. So I think it was that very early on in January. And in fact, the Queensland disaster management arrangements really swung into action at that stage. We started understanding the dimensions of the pandemic or what was playing out. And then for us, we started to understand, you know, particularly when travellers came from Wuhan into Melbourne and then travelled up into Queensland. So we instigated our public health response in late January. So, you know, we saw that emerging and we certainly whipped into gear very quickly.
So can I ask you around those sorts of plans, they're good guides, but how closely do you follow those scripts, or are they're just kind of a sense of what some of the issues are, and how did you use that sort of pandemic script?
I think, Gordon, one of the things, unfortunately, Queensland's been very well rehearsed at natural disasters. You know, we were certainly confronting the bushfire situation, you know, late in 2019 and certainly into the early parts of 2020. You know, 2020, usually in the sort of summertime, we get our cyclones. So I guess our state disaster arrangements are very well practiced and very well trialled. And I think what we saw very quickly was how important when we started seeing the situation in Wuhan, what we usually do is we have an agency. In this case, health was the strike agency and then supported very quickly with all the rest of the whole of government response. So the pandemic plans, you know, Queensland had a pandemic plan. We certainly recognised and we brought that off the shelf and we then started operationalising. And quite frankly, it was a very good plan. Obviously, you know, as this pandemic has rolled out and time has moved on, then we've had to adjust and move very quickly. And, you know, I guess in the last, you know, watching Melbourne very closely at the moment is, you know, how important aged care facilities are. And you know, one of the things we do is we go back and test our plans, develop new plans and then implement. So it's a bit of an iterative process.
Yeah, so you mentioned Queensland sadly has lots of natural disasters, so it means that you're more attuned to that. Can you talk a little bit about either what that means for relationships, say, across the service,
sure.
Also for how proactive you are in thinking when something happens, how quickly you've got to respond or think about what the series of steps are?
Well, again, Gordon, the Queensland disaster management arrangements are very structured. As I said, we'd come out of the bushfire season heading into the cyclone season. And as soon as we saw this, the Premier called the Queensland State Disaster Management Committee together. It started meeting very regularly. And I think we had our first meeting of the Queensland Disaster Management Committee in, again, I think it was on the 30th of January in relation to the pandemic. And I guess what we saw was it escalating. And so the Premier moved very quickly to create a cabinet committee, which was the Queensland Disaster Cabinet Committee. Basically, that committee is a very collegiate committee. It's chaired by the Premier. It has all of the key ministers around the table, all the key directors generals, the police commissioner, but importantly, the state disaster controller, who happens to be our deputy police commissioner. So we had all the agencies around. We had local government at the table. We had key stakeholders at the table. So it was something that worked very well. It's worked very well for us in practice. And it's certainly something that we've continued to work. And I guess, you know, we are a collegiate group, particularly in a disaster. And, you know, this was no different, really.
Yeah. I'd like to take the conversation into three areas. One's talking about how service delivery to the Queensland public changed, or how you use technology or other ways to ensure continuity of service. Then we'll talk about elements of how the public service itself worked and the changes in practices, and then come back and reflect on some of the relationships, including with ministers and in the Federation. But can we start with service delivery? How have you gone about, how has Queensland gone about maintaining continuity and quality service delivery to the Queensland public?
I guess service, you know, service delivery in many respects has changed fundamentally with COVID. So, you know, yes, we still deliver our policing services. We deliver our frontline services through emergency response. You know, we still deliver all of our ag services. We deliver our, you know, transport and main roads customer services, you name it. Those services are still there, but the way people interact with us has changed. So we always had a strong digital presence, but we always maintained front of counter services as well. And I think what we've seen during COVID is that people have moved more to the digital presence. And the other thing we've done is that we've actually pushed service delivery out. So instead of waiting for Queensland citizens to come to us, we've tended to push those services out to Queensland citizens to make sure they're aware of what's happening. But certainly under COVID, there's been a lot of adjustment in service delivery.
Can you give some examples of how you've pushed out service delivery? What are some practical examples of that?
Yeah, transport and main roads around licensing. So, you know, we've really streamlined our licensing process. We've really gone, you know, and made sure that people can understand that they can renew licenses online. They can access the plethora of information. You know, don't get me wrong, there have been some challenges. And again, if I look at transport and main roads, you know, we had to suspend driver licensing testing. So, you know, they're things we've done. But now that, you know, we're doing quite well in our response to the pandemic, we've been able to reintroduce those services as we've been able to lift restrictions. You know, I guess the most fundamental, and it's as much to do with the Commonwealth, is in the way health delivery services have happened. You know, e-health has been, I think, one of the most amazing phenomena that we've seen. And I think the conversion of people wanting to go and see a GP or a health professional and willing to do that online has made a fundamental change. I think the other area, just really quickly, is around hospitalities. So as you know, with liquor licensing and how we regulate, a lot of those businesses have had to go online, do takeaway services early on, but we also made sure that we can merge all of the things that they would do as a restaurant so they could sell alcohol with that food, as an example.
Right. One of the two distinctive features of Queensland are that it's probably more a regional state, so it's a much more decentralized. So regions matter everywhere, but they really are hugely important. So any reflections around regional service delivery, but also reflections on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander engagement and service delivery for that community?
Gordon, I'll start with the latter because I think early on our Indigenous communities, which we have a very strong relationship with, again, just as an example, every week the Deputy Premier or the Premier would meet with every mayor from Indigenous communities and generally, you know, online, obviously, but we were very minded of how vulnerable those communities were and how we had to respond very differently to our Indigenous and Torres Strait communities. We, again, looked very carefully at what we had to do. In fact, we implemented protocols where, you know, we really restricted the number of people who went into community, but we made sure that, you know, we had that digital presence or that presence where people could actually get what we need. You know, resupply was really critical at that time, early on in the pandemic, and we made sure we doubled our efforts around resupply. Health workers, so we really restricted those people physically going into communities, but we then gave communities alternate channels to deal with what they needed in a public health sense. But you're right, Queensland is such a decentralised state. We've very much had a very different customer response to what happens in the southeast corner to what happens, you know, up the seaboard, but certainly in outback and regional Queensland.
Yeah, right. In thinking about some of these changes, and what you say is that they've been remarkable, especially, say, in telehealth or other things, how do you go about thinking about locking these changes in? So if the public has an expectation that they can get these services delivered differently and delivered well, how do you go about making sure that consciously you're locking these things in rather than just by accident or losing
them? Well, I think we've seen adaptation happen so rapidly. So, you know, I guess the pace we were following in changing our services to different platforms or different modes was basically how our customers were responding to us. But that's changed so rapidly. I think our customers now very clearly expect those services to be delivered in a different way. And quite frankly, we've adapted the public service. So, you know, a whole pile of things we used to do, we no longer do. And we've focused our attention on new service delivery modes and channels.
Well, that's a good way of shifting to the way the public service or the QPS works. Talk about some of those changes around, and then what you did differently and how that succeeded.
Well, I think, again, in time of disaster, we work very well together. We're very collegiate. And basically, we break down all the departmental barriers. And I think what we've seen now is a fundamental shift in the way we deploy public servants. So we've created a really good process where we've deployed people to where the need is the greatest. So, you know, as I said, early on, health was so important to us. We deployed people into the health department and into the hospital and health network to really support the COVID response. We deployed people into our state disaster organisations to support those frontline service delivery areas. So we have adapted as organisations and we've learnt how we can move and have greater mobility within the sector. And we're seeing that as in Queensland, as restrictions have lifted, you know, we're seeing a decentralisation of the service, you know, people moving into parts of the region as opposed to travelling to the CBD or travelling to you know, the more higher population areas. So we're just seeing that service being delivered differently.
Can you talk a bit about, and maybe some practical examples of those work hubs and how they operate and what they do?
So I'll give two examples. One is, again, early on, we recognised how important contact tracing would be in managing a pandemic outcome. And you know, again, we've seen that across the states in recent times. The Premier actually assigned a task to the Attorney General. Basically, you know, the health was, as I said, the health minister was the lead response, our deputy premier. But the premier said, right, contact tracing, Attorney General, I want you as an accountable minister to develop a team and work directly with health to really build that capacity. And so what we've done with the public service is we've deployed people to become and train them to become contact tracers. So, you know, so important in managing the pandemic. The Premier said to now Treasurer, you know, manufacturing and the delivery of PPE is something that's vital. I want you to be accountable for modelling what PPE requirements are going to be needed, but then going and identifying new manufacturing opportunities onshore. So we had a team that did that. Our communities group, again, the Premier said, well, we're going to have a lot of people in isolation, a lot of elderly people in isolation. I want to create what's called the care army. I want you to have community recovery people who come from across the sector, ringing those people in isolation or in home care. So we have that support network. So those people have someone they talk to every day and you know, we can deliver on what their requirements are, you know, food, health services, but more importantly, talking to them about their mental health and having that point of contact.
Yeah, you got so that's how the public service talks with the public. You got any sort of also on sort of working from home, those sorts of things, of how it talks to itself or the different bits of the service talking and using technology?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a bit like today. We've become all come experts at Teams or Zoom. Which, you know, again, I think leaders needed to adapt. We always said we had a flexible workforce. We really do now have a flexible workforce. And, you know, we've brought back 50% of the public service back to our offices, but we still rotate our teams so they can still work from home. You know, we don't have the structure. You know, people used to, I guess, the old public service of the 9-to-5 culture or the 7-to-whatever. We now have very broad bandwidths that people can work to deliver this, what they have to do, their work programs. But it's really required managers to really start managing and leaders to actually provide the opportunity for managers to direct their teams in a very different way. So we've been able to say, here's your work program, and then being able to check in. So it's just a very different face-to-face, you know, it's different from the face-to-face context.
Yeah, well, one of the things I've heard about from Queensland is, again, on the regional side, it's meant that the contact and the engagement between, say, Brisbane, public servants in Brisbane and then in the regions is much more equal. It's not like everything's centred in Brisbane. It's actually technology empowers the regions in that. So they're face-to-face on the Zoom. Like a Brisbane face is, so is a regional face.
Absolutely. It has been good. I'm always fascinated by the adoption. So people adapted and adopted working from home very quickly. And, you know, a lot of that was from necessity in the early days. Mm. But it's interesting to see how those practices have been sustained. And you know, I think service delivery is as good as it has been.
Yeah. Can I ask you mentioned mental health earlier, and it's really part of that responsibility of managers and teams and looking after the health. How's that gone in Queensland? Because I think most people would say mental health in all workplaces is a more serious difficulty now than it was before. How have you gone about addressing or thinking about those issues?
I think the key thing is people's connectedness to others. And, you know, when you lose that face-to-face contact in a physical environment, I think it's as equally important to make sure you have a communication pathway when you're in a digital or in a virtual forum. So one of the things we have continued to do, I communicate with my department every day. I send out a note telling them what's happened. But, you know, I know my deputy directors keep running their town halls. They do all of those interactions. And I know teams do that. They virtually meet as a team, if not a couple of times a day, at least once a day. And I think we've also emphasized our human service support that we have. We've always had that. But I think it's really that ongoing connection, making sure people know that they're not alone. And I think, you know, some people have a propensity to, you know, if they're working from home, they love it. They lock down and do what they need to do. But it's important that we keep communicating, and it's a two-way street.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we'll just talk to that third area now around relationships. And so probably talk a little bit about relationships with ministers and then across with the community and business and then in the Federation. But maybe you're happy to start with how's the pandemic changed the relationship or interaction between public servants and ministers, or has it?
I don't think it's changed too dramatically, quite frankly. I think again, in that Queensland disaster management structure, the collaboration between ministers and the public service is very strong. I think, you know, again, we do our very best work, and you know, it's great seeing ministers around that QDMCC, the Queensland Disaster Management Cabinet table, and how they interact with the public sector. The other thing the Premier's been very insistent and very good at doing is running scenario workshops. So early on, we ran a big scenario around, you know, what was coming over the, we could see this cloud coming over the horizon. we wanted to be prepared, and I was just amazed at the ideas and the thought process. And we ran a pandemic with a cyclone, and mm-hmm. then, the great thinking that was happening there. So I've seen that relationship strengthen. I've seen, premiers run the cabinet virtually initially, and we've been able to change our whole parliamentary processes as well. But, in fact, parliament's sitting as we speak and in a very different format. So those relationships are strong. I think what's changed dramatically is the relationships in the Federation. Mm. The invention of national cabinet. We had our 25th national cabinet meeting last Friday, and that forum has been outstanding. You've been involved in many COAG meetings as I have, and I have never seen so much achieved in so little time. Some of the chestnuts.
Yeah. So how do you maintain that? These are difficult questions, Dave.
I know. I think it's interesting. As Peter Conran's working at the moment with the Commonwealth, looking at what the shape of national cabinet will be in a peacetime as opposed to a pandemic time. And, I think the challenge will always be what we have with the pandemic is we have a common purpose. We have a common goal as a federation. I think the challenge will be maintaining that, particularly when, we start looking at policy areas that are quite complex. But I think the goodwill's there. I think the leadership's there. The Prime Minister with the premiers and the chief ministers, there is no question that everyone wants to do things differently. And I think this is our time to fundamentally shift from pandemic wartime to a national cabinet in peacetime that really achieves great outcomes and reform, regulatory reform.
Yeah, it's the political will that's always been the central piece of everything that's done. You got any reflections around just the nature of the Federation? And my sense is, as a long-time Canberra person, that things had been shifted more and more to Canberra, and that was the appetite of Canberra. Yeah. What this has shown is that when it comes to public health and safety, education and health and enforcement, that's really the states are sovereign. And there's been a sense of sovereignty of jurisdiction of state and territory jurisdictions, and that's changed the view around how the Federation should go. You got any reflections on that?
It's interesting, Gordon. I think early on there was this view that we had to have a single song sheet, that people followed the rules very closely. But I think what we've tried to do is have nationally consistent rules, but the way the states have implemented those rules has changed. And, the subtlety of things like border closures or, particular restrictions or the way these things have happened. And quite frankly, I think that's been successful. States have made decisions on the best basis of, the health advice, but in the best interest of their own economies. And, we've seen what's happened in Victoria. We've sent resources to Victoria, not only health resources, but also policy and community recovery resources. And I think this whole resource sharing has been really key for a common interest, but I think states definitely have done things. We've managed our border issues, and that focus has been on how we manage the pandemic within our state. I think we have the balance right. I think we aim for national consistency. We aim for watching the AHPPC advice. But states are sovereign, and they do what they need to do.
How do you manage within that some of the risks, to supply chains, that lots of economic activity spreads across states? Yeah. And if you have to close down particular areas for a health issue, then it can have disproportionate impacts on some of that supply, security of supply, and maybe unintended consequences. How do you think about those things as a public servant?
I think that, again, the national cabinet process and our first secretary's meetings or our senior officers' meetings, we understand again the importance of and supply chains are great things. So freight movement by heavy vehicle. So initially, states were doing different things, and then there was a very strong view, look, we need to be consistent in that approach, and having these codes of practice developed that actually manages freight movement. So, the freighters only have to have a single permit. The driver has to be tested every 7 days. So we got that consistency. We got that consistency in the maritime space, with particularly with, you know, shipping and bulk shipping. I'll put cruise ships to one side. You know, we've had that same issue with the, you know, of quarantining people flying in from outside the country. So I think where and you know, another example was early on was this whole notion of residential tenancies and commercial tenancies. So, you know, everyone identified an issue, hibernation of business. We needed to manage that tenancy issue, and we developed the national code. So I think where there's a common purpose, everyone comes together to come up with a framework. How that framework's implemented is sometimes different.
Yeah. Can I ask you on the relationships side, how you've seen sort of government interact with, say, communities or with business, sort of relationship, that many of the solutions or finding a way through this are found iteratively with others. You've got any examples or how you've seen that work in practice?
Again, what we've done in Queensland is we set up very quickly what we called an alliance. So within my department, we have a task force, which is basically focused on, you know, their focus now is on economic recovery. It's part of the recovery process, our Unite and Recover. But one of the key things we identified is making sure that we brought our key stakeholders along. So the Premier created an alliance. So we've met, I can't remember how many times now, certainly many times, and there's subgroups of the alliance, but, you know, they're the peak industry bodies, you know, whether it's, you know, the social services sector or the, you know, the chambers of commerce or, you know, those peak industries. And look, that's worked well. We've been able to listen and hear from them, and that's certainly been a key input into our roadmap. And the various restriction easing stages of our roadmap. And in sometimes where we've had to, you know, reintroduce restrictions like we did with the border, so you can imagine that would have had a significant impact on tourism, you know, they were part of the decision-making process and they understood the reasons. So I think that external stakeholder collaboration has been very good and has worked well.
Yeah. I guess we're coming to an end. Can I ask you for some personal reflections on, in a sense, what you've discovered about yourself, or what you've learned about yourself in this process?
I think one of the key things is your ability to, I use the word pivot, your ability to adapt. I think that's been fundamental. You know, this I couldn't imagine where we were in January, where I am today in August, and the fundamental changes that we've done to our business, the fundamental changes we've seen in our community. So, you know, I think being nimble and being able to change and adapt quickly has been something that's important. And you know, again, I think one of the great things of being a leader at this stage is the relationships that you've had, but the relationships and you've developed across the board. It's certainly been a very, very, very busy time, but, you know, it's good to be in the leadership role and advising the Premier and ministers and working as a team. And, you know, I'm immensely proud of the Queensland Public Service. They've done outstanding work. And, you know, the other thing I must admit is the power of my own personal team. So, you know, my office team have just been outstanding and, you know, I take my hat off to them. They've done remarkable work.
So let's see, probably a little bit around resilience on that. How have you been able to be resilient? I mean, some of it's just the adrenaline and the imperative of dealing with an issue. Yeah. But how do you find your resilience? How do you bolster that?
Oh, you know, I think having a great team around you is so important. And, you know, we work, you know, it is so collegiate. It's the most collegiate I've ever, you know, I thought my team was very collegiate. It's the best I've ever seen. You know, people really roll their sleeves up and get on with it. And look, you know, we talk to each other. You know, we talk about the things that aren't going so well, whether they're our own personal interactions, but we certainly talk about the successes we've had and we work off that. But, you know, as I said, it's I think you've got to maintain a really good balance. You've got to look at what you're trying to achieve. It's often hard to stay connected with your family when you're working tremendous hours, But I think when you see what we've achieved as a state, I'm immensely proud and happy to be part of that process. Only one person in a cog of many.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Dave, for your time. That's very much appreciated. Yeah. And thank you also for your service to your state and to the nation. So thank you very much, Dave.
Thanks, Gordon.
And there you have it, another great conversation hosted by Dr. Gordon De Brouwer. Work with Purpose, a national perspective. Work with Purpose is part of the GovComs podcast network. And if you do want to check out that GovComs podcast, please type it into your favourite podcast browser and it is sure to come up. If you do happen to come across our social media promotion for Work with Purpose, please pass it along and share it because it will help it to be found. And if you do have enough time to give us a generous rating, probably a 5-star review, that would be appreciated as well because that will help us to be discovered. Thanks again to our good friends at IPA and to the Australian Public Service Commission for their ongoing support. And thanks to you, the audience, for coming back once again. That's it for now. We'll be back at the same time next week. But for the moment, it's bye for now.